The moon-shaking thunder of the rockets sleeping from their cradles was long past. Now the fleet glided on metal wings with straining secondary ramjets through the rage of the Jovian sky. As Cornelius opened the control room door, he looked at his telltale board. Elsewhere, a voice told the word to all the stations.
One ship wrecked. Two ships wrecked.
But Anglesey would let no sound enter his presence when he wore the helmet. An obliging technician had haywired a panel of 15 red and 15 blue lights above Cornelius's S-projector to keep him informed, too. Ostensibly, of course, they were only there for Anglesey's benefit, though the S-man had insisted that he wouldn't be looking at them. Four of the red bulbs were dark, and thus four blue ones would not shine for a safe landing. A whirlwind, a thunderbolt, a floating ice meteor, a flock of mantle-like birds with flesh as dense and hard as iron. There could be 100 things which would have crumbled four ships and tossed them tattered across the poison forests. Four ships, hell! Think of four living creatures, with an excellence of brain to rival your own, damned first to years of unconscious night and then, never awakening, save for one uncomprehending instant, dashed in bloody splinters against an ice mountain. The wasteful callousness of it was a cold knot in Cornelius's belly. It had to be done, no doubt, if there was to be any thinking life on Jupiter at all, but then let it be done quickly and minimally, he thought, so that the next generation could be begotten by love and not by machines. He closed the door behind him and waited for a breathless moment. Anglesey was a wheelchair and coppery curve of helmet facing the opposite wall. No movement, no awareness whatsoever. Good. It would be awkward, perhaps ruinous, if Anglesey learned of this most intimate peering. But he needn't, ever. He was blindfolded and earplugged by his own concentration. Nevertheless, the sonicist moved his bulky form with care across the room to his new S-projector. He did not as much like his snooper's role. He would not have assumed it at all if he had seen any other hope. But neither did it make him feel especially guilty. If what he suspected was true, then Anglesey was all unawares being twisted into something not human. To spy on him might be to save him. Gently, Cornelius activated the meters and started his tubes warming up. The oscilloscope built into Anglesey's machine gave him the other man's exact alpha rhythm, his basic biological clock. First you adjusted to that, then you discovered the subtler elements by feel, and when your set was fully in phase, you could probe undetected and find out what was wrong, read Anglesey's tortured subconscious, and see what there was on Jupiter that both drew and terrified him.
Five ships wrecked.
But it must be very nearly time for them to land. Maybe only five would be lost in all. Maybe 10 would get through. 10 comrades for Jill? Cornelius sighed. He looked at the cripple seated blind and deaf to the human world which had crippled him, and felt a pity and an anger. It wasn't fair. None of it was. Not even to Joe. Joe wasn't any kind of soul-eating devil. He didn't realize as yet that he was Joe, that Anglesey was becoming a mere appendage. He hadn't asked to be created, and to withdraw his human counterpart from him would very likely be to destroy him. Somehow there were always penalties for everybody when men exceeded the decent limits. Cornelius swore at himself voicelessly. Work to do. He sat down and fitted the helmet to his own head. The carrier wave made a faint pulse, inaudible, the trembling of neurons low in his awareness. He couldn't describe it. Reaching up, he tuned to Anglesey's alpha. His own had a somewhat lower frequency. It was necessary to carry the signals through a heterodyning process. Still no reception. Well, of course, he had to find the exact waveform. Timbre was as basic to thought as to music. He adjusted the dial slowly, with enormous care. Something flashed through his consciousness, a vision of clouds roiled in a violent red sky, a wind that galloped across horizonless immensity. He lost it. His fingers shook as he tuned back. The psi-beam between Joe and Anglesey broadened. It took Cornelius into the circuit. He looked through Joe's eyes. He stood on a hill and stared into the sky above ice mountains, straining for the sign of the first rocket, and simultaneously he was still Jan Cornelius, blurrily seeing the meters, probing about for emotions, symbols, any key to the locked terror in Anglesey's soul. The terror rose up and struck him in the face. Sonic detection is not a matter of passive listening in. Much as a radio receiver is necessarily also a weak transmitter, the nervous system in resonance with any source of sonic spectrum energy is itself emitting. Normally, of course, this effect is unimportant. But when you pass the impulses either way through a set of heterodyning and amplifying units with a high negative feedback, in the early days, sonic psychotherapy vitiated itself because the amplified thoughts of one man entering the brain of another would combine with the latter's own neural cycles according to the ordinary vector laws. The result was that both men felt the new beat frequencies as a nightmarish fluttering of their very thoughts. An analyst, trained into self-control, could ignore it. His patient could not and reacted violently. But eventually, the basic human timbres were measured and sonic therapy resumed. The modern S-projector analyzed an incoming signal and shifted its characteristics over to the listener's pattern. The really different pulses of the transmitting brain, those which could not possibly be mapped onto the pattern of the receiving neurons, as an exponential signal cannot very practically be mapped onto a sinusoid, those were filtered out. Thus compensated, the other thought could be apprehended as comfortably as one's own. If the patient were on a psi-beam circuit, a skilled operator could tune in without the patient being necessarily aware of it. The operator could either probe the other man's thoughts or implant thoughts of his own. Cornelius's plan, an obvious one to a sonicist, had depended on this. He would receive from an unwitting Anglesey Joe. If his theory was right and the S-man's personality was being distorted into that of a monster, his thinking would be too alien to come through the filters. Cornelius would receive spottily or not at all. If his theory was wrong, and Anglesey was still Anglesey, he would receive only a normal human stream of consciousness and could probe for other troublemaking factors. His brain roared.
What's happening to me?
For a moment, the interference which turned his thoughts to sawtoothed gibberish struck him down with panic. He gulped for breath there in the Jovian wind, and his dreadful dog sensed the alienness in him and whined. Then, recognition, remembrance, and a blaze of anger so great that it left no room for fear. Joe filled his lungs and shouted it aloud. The hillside boomed with echoes.
Get out of my mind!
He felt Cornelius spiral down toward unconsciousness. The overwhelming force of his own mental blow had been too much. He laughed. It was more like a snarl, and eased the pressure. Above him, between thunderous clouds, winked the first thin descending rocket flare. Cornelius's mind groped back toward the light. It broke a watery surface. The man's mouth snapped after air, and his hand reached for the dials to turn off his machine and escape.
Not so fast, you.
Grimly, Joe drove home a command that locked Cornelius's muscles rigid. I want to know the meaning of this. Hold still and let me look. He smashed home an impulse which could be rendered, perhaps, as an incandescent question mark. Remembrance exploded in shards through the sonicist's forebrain.
So, that's all there is. You thought I was afraid to come down here and be Joe and wanted to know why? But I told you I wasn't.
I should have believed, whispered Cornelius.
Well, get out of the circuit, then.
Joe continued growling it violently.
And don't ever come back in the control room, understand? K-tubes or no, I don't want to see you again. And I may be a cripple, but I can still take you apart, cell by cell. Now sign off. Leave me alone. The first ship will be landing in minutes.
You a cripple? You? Joe Anglesey?
What?
The great gray being on the hill lifted his barbaric head as if to sudden trumpets.
What do you mean?
Don't you understand?
Said the weak, dragging thought.
You know how the S-projector works. You know I could have probed Anglesey's mind and Anglesey's brain without making enough interference to be noticed. And I could not have probed a wholly non-human mind at all, nor could it have been aware of me. The filters would not have passed such a signal. Yet you felt me in the first fractional second. That could only mean a human mind and a non-human brain. You are not the half-corpse on Jupiter 5 any longer. You're Joe. Joe Anglesey.
Well, I'll be damned, said Joe.
You're right. He turned Anglesey off, kicked Cornelius out of his mind with a single brutal impulse, and ran down the hill to meet the spaceship. Cornelius woke up minutes afterward. His skull felt ready to split apart. He groped for the main switch before him, clashed it down, ripped the helmet off his head and threw it clanging on the floor. But it took a little while to gather the strength to do the same for Anglesey. The other man was not able to do anything for himself. They sat outside sickbay and waited. It was a harshly lit barrenness of metal and plastic, smelling of antiseptics, down near the heart of the satellite with miles of rock to hide the terrible face of Jupiter. Only Viken and Cornelius were in the cramped little room. The rest of the station went about its business mechanically, filling in the time till it could learn what happened. Beyond the door, three biotechnicians, who were also the station's medical staff, fought with Death's Angel for the thing which had been Edward Anglesey. 9 ships got down, said Viken dully. 2 males, 7 females. It's enough to start a colony.
It would be genetically desirable to have more, pointed out Cornelius.
He kept his own voice low in spite of its underlying cheerfulness. There is a certain awesome quality to all this. I still don't understand, said Viken.
Oh, it's clear enough now. I should have guessed it before, maybe. We had all the facts. It was only that we couldn't make the simple, obvious interpretation of them. No, we had to conjure up Frankenstein's monster.
Well, Viken's words grated, we have played Frankenstein, haven't we? Ed is dying in there.
It depends on how you define death.
Cornelius drew hard on his cigar, needing anything that might steady him. His tone grew purposely dry of emotion.
Look here. Consider the data. Joe now. A creature with a brain of human capacity, but without a mind. A perfect Lockean tabula rosa for Anglesey's psi-beam to write on. We deduced correctly enough, if very belatedly, that when enough had been written, there would be a personality. But the question was whose? Because, I suppose, of normal human fear of the unknown, we assumed that any personality in so alien a body had to be monstrous. Therefore, it must be hostile to Anglesey, must be swamping him.
The door opened. Both men jerked to their feet. The chief surgeon shook his head. No use. Typical deep shock traumata, close to terminus now. If we had better facilities, maybe.
No, said Cornelius. You cannot save a man who has decided not to live anymore.
I know. The doctor removed his mask. I need a cigarette. Who's got one? His hands shook a little as he accepted it from Viken.
But how could he decide anything? Choked the physicist. He's been unconscious ever since Jan pulled him away from that thing.
It was decided before then, said Cornelius. As a matter of fact, that hulk in there on the operating table no longer has a mind.
I know. I was there.
He shuddered a little. A stiff shot of tranquilizer was all that held nightmares away from him. Later, he would have to have that memory exercised. The doctor took a long drag of smoke, held it in his lungs a moment, and exhaled gustily.
I guess that winds up this project, he said. We'll never get another Essman.
I'll say you won't.
Viken's tone sounded rusty.
I'm going to smash that devil's engine myself.
Hold on a minute, exclaimed Cornelius. Don't you understand? This isn't the end, it's the beginning.
I'd better get back, said the doctor. He stubbed out his cigarette and went through the door. It closed behind him with a death-like quietness.
What do you mean? Viken said, as if erecting a barrier.
Won't you understand? Roared Cornelius. Joe has all Anglesey's habits, thoughts, memories, prejudices, interests. Oh, yes, different body and different environment, they do cause some changes, but no more than any man might undergo on Earth. If you were suddenly cured of a wasting disease, wouldn't you get a little boisterous and rough? There's nothing abnormal in it, nor is it abnormal to want to stay healthy. No? Do you see?
Viken sat down. He spent a while without speaking. Then enormously slow and careful.
Do you mean Joe is Ed?
Or Ed is Joe, whatever you like. He calls himself Joe now. I think as a symbol of freedom. But he's still himself. What is the ego but continuity of existence? He himself did not fully understand this. He only knew, he told me and I should have believed him, that on Jupiter he was strong and happy. Why'd the K-tube oscillate? A hysterical symptom.
Anglesey's subconscious was not afraid to stay on Jupiter. It was afraid to come back. And then today I listened in. By now, his whole self was focused on Joe. That is, the primary source of libido was Joe's virile body, not Anglesey's sick one. This meant a different pattern of impulses. Not too alien to pass the filters, but alien enough to set up interference. So he felt my presence. And he saw the truth, just as I did. Do you know the last emotion I felt as Joe threw me out of his mind? Not anger anymore. He plays rough, but all he had room to feel was joy. I knew how strong a personality Anglesey has. Whatever made me think an overgrown child brain like Joe's could override it? And there, the doctors? Bah! They're trying to salvage a hulk that's been shed because it's useless. Cornelius stopped. His throat was quite raw from talking. He paced the floor, rolled cigarette smoke around his mouth, but did not draw it any further in. When a few minutes had passed, Viken said cautiously, "All right, you should know. And as you said, you were there. But what do we do now? How do we get in touch with Ed? Will he even be interested in contacting us?" "Oh, yes, of course," said Cornelius. "He's still himself, remember. Now that he has none of the cripple's frustrations, he should be more amiable. When the novelty of his new friends wear off, he'll still want someone who can talk to him as an equal." "And precisely who will operate another pseudo?" asked Viken sarcastically. "I'm quite happy with this skinny frame of mine, thank you." "Was Anglesey the only hopeless cripple on Earth?" asked Cornelius quietly. Viken gaped at him. "And there are aging men, too," went on the sonicist, half to himself. "Someday, my friend, when you and I feel the years close in, and so much we would like to learn, maybe we too would enjoy an extra lifetime in a Jovian body." He nodded at his cigar. "A hard, lusty, stormy kind of life, granted. Dangerous, brawling, violent. But life as no human perhaps has lived since the days of Elizabeth I. Oh, yes. There will be small trouble finding Jovians." He turned his head as the surgeon came out again. "Well," croaked Viken. The doctor sat down. "It's finished," he said. They waited for a moment awkwardly. "Odd," said the doctor. He groped after a cigarette he didn't have. Silently, Viken offered him one. "Odd. I've seen these cases before. People who simply resign from life. This is the first one I ever saw that went out smiling. Smiling all the time." And that was Call Me Joe by Paul Anderson. Your reader has been Warren James. This story is copyright by Paul Anderson, and this reading is performance copyright 2001 by Hour 25 Productions. All rights reserved.